weekdays from 4.
105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Seeing you home. Cambridge
105. The Gadget Guide.
It's Good Friday, but our gadgeteers, Rob and Lawrence, are here with another edition of the Gadget Guide. How many are we up to now, then?
Oh, I've completely lost track, Julian.
You always started by saying it's Gadget Guide number whatever it is.
Lawrence will figure that out in a second. Anyway, in a few moments' time, we'll be looking at all things wearable technology. There's been the wearable tech conference down in London a couple of weeks ago.
So
we'll be bringing you all of the latest news on that. But first of all, a quick bit of a look at the general tech news. Now, first of all, the Apple v FBI case. This is something that we've spoken about, I think, on the last couple of Gadget Guides. The background to this is the terrible murder in San Bernardino. The attacker there, their phone was confiscated. The FBI want to be able to look at the contents of the phone to gather potential evidence, but the attacker was killed as part of it, so they can't get him to unlock it. They've therefore been asking Apple to effectively crack into the phone. Apple have been saying, no, that's a bad thing for privacy, and that court case has been going on for a bit. The latest news on that is that the FBI have actually postponed the most recent court hearing because they believe that they have a way in without Apple's help.
But what's to stop Apple coming along and re-engineering something else? I only got an update on my Apple phone in the early hours of this morning. Who's to say the next update won't include, I don't know, more complicated encryption keys or however they do it?
It already does. So the phone the attacker had was a couple of generations old, and that was something without what's called Secure Enclave. And that's effectively a very small part of the phone that handles a lot of the really deep down security bits. That wasn't present on that phone, which means that the security
easier
of that
to hack
was a lot less strong than if you went down to the Apple store today and bought a phone. Nonetheless, there's still a lot of questions out there now as a result. People on the one hand are sort of saying, yay, Apple doesn't have to make this compromised version of iOS. On the other hand, if Apple don't have to make it and the FBI are reasonably confident that they can get in, that means there's someone else who does know how to do it. And in a sense, that's almost scarier.
So there was talk that they were getting help from an Israeli company to get in. So it's interesting. Now, I guess the one that they're trying to hack didn't have a fingerprint reader.
That's correct, right. Yes. And that's part of this secure enclave. So if you've got an iPhone with a fingerprint reader, it's...
But surely if they've got the body...
Yeah, that's true.
They have a finger.
That is true.
Yes.
I can see a human rights issue coming. If you try to force my thumb onto my phone, then that could arguably be classed as an assault.
And there is a good argument against biometrics, which is actually from a personal protection point of view. If let's say my bank account, instead of being protected by a PIN, was protected by my fingerprint, would that actually be good for me? Because if someone was to mug me for my credit card, then they just chop off my finger instead.
Yeah.
Because if they want to get access to my bank account, they'll just chop off the finger.
Yeah.
And run away with the
thing. Yeah, a lot of people still carry cards and stuff, and it's probably easier to make off with those.
Totally,
instead.
But the point is that if I'm being mugged, it's a lot. If I'm feeling threatened, I might make the choice to hand over my bank account card and my PIN number. I can do that. That might cost me a few £1,000. But it only cost me a few £1,000.
Not a finger.
If someone takes my finger off,
many years ago, I was mugged, and I took the decision just to hand stuff over. That seemed to be
a
fairly
many people would.
Hand stuff over, then go cancel the cards.
Exactly,
seems to be a much much better situation to do for all concerned.
But if it needs your fingerprint, you might not be able to do that. So that's an interesting one. Anyway, that case, it's on hold at the moment.
We'll keep watching and see what happens, yes.
The next one was interesting. This is moving from Apple to Microsoft. They've been at their artificial intelligence. You might recall that Facebook and Google were playing Go a couple of weeks ago, and indeed Google winning at Go against one of the world champions. Microsoft, on the other hand, have been tweeting. Or more correctly, writing a computer program to tweet. And it's Microsoft Tay. And the idea was that it would go on Twitter and it would hold conversations with people and people would chat to it and it would learn as it went along.
Was this a bit of a Turing experiment?
It was. So the Turing test is can you write a computer program that an independent judge cannot differentiate from a human? And the Turing test, you pass the Turing test if the judge can't see you and they can't tell whether it's a bot or a human they're talking to.
Movie in for you, Ex Machina, if you haven't seen it yet.
Very true. Microsoft, on the other hand, this one survived less than 24 hours because it did learn from the people it was talking about. And unfortunately, the internet, whilst being a generally wonderful thing, also has...
But sick and twisted?
Yes, people who don't have the best ethics. And so less than 24 hours in, it was... I won't read these tweets out because they're very much definitely not suitable for broadcast. But it had gone... first of all, through to some extremes of the political spectrum and then into outright racism.
I think it got accused of being Nazi as well.
It did, which is probably sadly a reflection more on us as society than it is as Microsoft, as their ability to write programs.
So they wiped it.
So they had to take it offline before it said anything too bad. So
it could have ended up competing with various political figures in countries not like the UK.
Indeed, and it was claimed that it was behaving very much like some well-known non-UK politicians. Finally, though, on the lighter side of things, Google. Google Street View might be familiar with that. You can drop the little yellow man onto a road and have a look around the road. Well, if you're looking forward to the new Batman v Superman film, you can use Google Street View to go and explore the Batcave.
Excellent.
So there we go. That's
Street View's gone into a lot of buildings recently, so it's quite cool. And they keep adding more and more. Maybe they'll start doing some Cambridge buildings.
Well, funny enough, they redid Cambridge, I think, last year. Sometime it was.
Did you find yourself on Street View or something?
Literally, yes. If you look up my house, there's me outside my front door just going in.
Right, we'll go and check that out during the break. Gadget Guide number 86.
Right, Gadget Guide, and it's back to Robin Lawrence.
And welcome back to the Gadget Guide. Right, time to talk all things wearable tech. Now, Lawrence, you headed down to the Wearable Tech Show, didn't you?
I did, and it was bigger this year than last year.
Okay.
They've also co-showed it with a couple of other shows, so they've added the Augmented Reality Show.
I suppose that makes sense.
Which makes quite a lot of sense with the whole VR, virtual reality, wearable headsets and so on, that pretty much every other stand had a Galaxy VR.
This is the way you take your phone and put it into a box.
You can put a Galaxy S6 or S7 or the Plus variants into the headset. It's about a £60 headset, really, which is not
It's pretty
ridiculously
much just a pair
expensive.
Of glasses, isn't it? Of lenses.
It also has a USB pass-through to power your phone, so it does do a bit more than that, and your phone interacts with it. It's got a sensor to know that you've got it against your face, so it turns off the screen when you take them off. So lots of people showing VR stuff. The other thing that added to the show was the IoT Connect show.
So this is Internet of Things.
Yes, so there were lots of people with home automation systems, but with a wearable slant. You know, it's all very well, you know, we sat in one of the talks and they were talking about smart homes. And one of the presenters said, you know, we've had smart homes since the 60s. You know, you had a button you could push that would bring down the blinds.
Yep.
You had a button you could push that would bring down a screen and turn on a projector. We've had that technology for ages. They said, interestingly, they've seen the movement from having a fancy touch panel where you push a button and it does the home theater setup to people wanting a light switch again.
Yeah.
But what they're seeing with the wearable stuff is now you've got a smart watch on or your phone on you all the time. When you walk into a room, your music follows you.
So
the lights come on, mm-hmm. the heating adjusts.
And more importantly, they go off when you leave the room, because I dare say, you know, I confess, you know, I'll pop the speakers on in both the kitchen and in the dining room because I'm hovering between the two of them.
Yeah. So they're saying it's not about a smart home, it's about a connected home, where your home now becomes the Internet of Things, where all of the things start to be able to participate in your life rather than you having to drive them actively. So it's more about the passive interaction, using wearables to drive that sort of information. Also things like having a sleep sensor under your mattress that can then detect when you're getting ready to wake up and do things like turn on your music, turn on the lights, wake you up.
But that's interesting. Something like that, if you have, say, a restless night, mm-hmm. and you're tossing and turning at 5 o'clock in the morning, when actually you're not going to be getting up till 6:30, the last thing you want is some music blasting out.
You do set a tolerance. So you say, no, my smart alarm, I'm happy around 6:30, give or take 20 minutes.
Okay.
You know, if I'm then, you know, in very light sleep at 6:10, I'm okay to be woken up. I'm not going to be grumpy as anything. But if I'm still in deep sleep at 6:30, give me another 20-minute sleep because it's going to be good for me. So that's the sort of intelligence that these devices can go for.
Yeah, and it's really about building, because as you said, the sort of the glitzy touch panels were all very shiny, but actually often harder to use than the real things. At some of our meeting rooms at work, we took these very fancy touchscreen dimmers and changed it for a normal light switch, and it's much easier.
It's a bit like TV remote controls to a certain extent. You need when your mum comes to stay, you need to be able to just throw the remote and she can get BBC One.
But it is the difference.
Power buttons, channel controls and volume.
Is the difference between the interface, the human interface, and the intelligence behind it. So you might have something that looks like a light switch, but actually that's interacting with a control system that can also know where your mobile phone is.
So it can do both, in other words.
Exactly. Yes. So it's a smart light switch, but it still feels like a light switch. You still hit the button that feels like a button, but at the same time, when you drive out of the house without remembering to turn off your lights, it'll do that for you.
Well, yes, and this is where it can get really interesting with Internet of Things, where your car can have intelligence in it, so your car knows when you've left home, tells your house Julian's driven away, so turn down the central heating, turn off the lights. But a bit of smart intelligence, so Julian's away for a few hours, it's got dark, turn the lights on, make it look like someone's at home, that sort of thing. All those sort of features can start to make your home a lot more intelligent. And also the interesting thing is the utility companies getting involved on this and saying, you know, our smart meter doesn't just have to be something that can do your electricity is this many kilowatts this month. Why not see that as the hub that starts to drive the smart home? And the utility companies, certainly in Europe, are starting to see this.
That's interesting, because I noticed, for example, AlertMe, a Cambridge company, was bought by British Gas, for example.
Yeah. So it looks like Germany is quite ahead of the game on this one, and it's going to be interesting to see how they come across to the UK and drive that technology into our homes through the smart meter as your gateway to smart technology.
And I think that's a fair point as well, because we were just discussing off air a few minutes ago, Julian. It's all well and good having all of these different bits of smart technology, but it's bringing them all together. You might have some light wave RF stuff controlling a couple of your sockets. You might have some Philips Hue light bulbs. You might have a Nest or a Hive controlling your central heating.
There's only so many you can cope with, quite frankly.
Exactly. And each of those, if you use the manufacturer's recommended software, each of those might be a different mobile app. Each of those might have a different remote control. Each of those might have a different gateway box that takes it onto your internet connection. And really bringing those together is one of the challenges. That means you can go to all of the different manufacturers, get the best of each in the devices, but control them in a joined up way.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's lots of ways to homebrew this with things like Raspberry Pis, and we've talked about that, and there's certainly hundreds of projects out there to turn your Raspberry Pi into...
But the problem is getting this to the everyday state, isn't it?
So I came across a company on Kickstarter last year called Ncube and had a good chat to the founder. He was at the Wearable Tech Show because he was on the panel talking about smart homes. And their product is aiming to be a central hub that talks to all of these different technologies. So they're building into it stuff to talk straight away on your Wi-Fi, so it can talk to the outside world, but then it can talk to your Sonos, it can talk to your light bulbs, it can talk to your Lightwave RF, it can talk to Zigbee-based systems like the Nest thermostats and smoke detectors. So they're starting to look at themselves as being we're a hub in the middle that can talk to all of these things. And interestingly, they said a lot of vendors are now starting to go, right, it's not worth our interest staying proprietary and closed. We must open up APIs, so that's application programming interfaces, so that everyone else can talk to our device as well.
And it makes sense for the manufacturers as well, because it means they can concentrate on building a brilliant light bulb or a brilliant central heating control system or whatever, and not have to waste their money, waste their time, waste their efforts in writing another mobile app.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Someone else can do it better.
Yeah.
Why don't you just use that?
So particularly for small firms, which quite frankly often do, you know, the technology, which the hardware might be pretty good, but doesn't necessarily apply to the software.
Very true.
So there are apps out already that you can download free of charge. One of them's Yonomi, and it will integrate a bunch of these things. So it uses the APIs that these vendors have published, like Sonos and like LifeX and like Nest, and allows you to then set some clever, intelligent rules. I'm coming home. It knows I've left work. I wanted to do things like turn on the central heating. As I walk into the house, I wanted to tell me what the temperature is. I wanted to read me a weather report, tell me if there's been any disturbances through the webcam watching the letterbox, if the postman has been. All those sort of things can now be done very easily. And it's getting easier every single iteration of these products, and more vendors coming up with smarter ways of linking things.
So what do you, Gon, you've been down to this show. What do you reckon your favourite gadgets of the show?
Favourite gadgets? Well, one of them was an interesting Cambridge company. I think we'll have to get them in because they were very interesting, and they did win one of the awards for best newcomers at the show. And this PitPat product is, think about it as Fitbit for your dog. So
is this for overweight dogs, or
your dog would eat it? Surely,
you're actually spot on there, Rob. They said the problem with a lot of pet owners is they don't know what the healthy exercise rate for their dog is.
Oh right,
they
also don't know if it changes by dog.
It does.
By breed.
So what their app does, and it's quite important, is more than just tracking. Is you set the type of dog up on your app, okay, and it will know what the average for that dog should be in terms of exercise. It'll give you the food advice and tell you whether your dog's getting enough exercise or not. Because the other problem is people over-exercising their dogs.
Yeah.
You might have a nice short-legged little dog that is effectively a lap dog. You take it out for three walks a day. Might be too much for the thing.
Very true.
So it's quite interesting. So,
Mum, I hope you're listening at this point. This is your gadget. This is your birthday present we're talking about here.
I think we'll have to get the guys from PitPat in to chat to us because they are just around the corner in Brooklands Avenue, and they do sound like a cool company.
I can borrow a dog to test it on.
it's a collar, isn't it?
It's a little tag that fits on any dog collar. Their interesting one is it's waterproof and the battery lasts a year.
Ah, there we go. Anyway, we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with the next gadget guide. In the meantime, have a good evening.